It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So with the school year underway, we check in with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley. Out on the campaign trail, Governor Tony Evers has proposed a $2 billion education funding package boost, dipping into the state's massive surplus at a Superior Elementary School Thursday.
The state has an obligation around helping schools fund their operations, and frankly, we've been, you know, before I became governor, it was 8 years of cuts.
Courtesy KDLH-TV, join in on school funding issues in your district, 800-642-1234. Superintendent Jill Underley, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you so much, Kate. I'm excited to be here.
Good morning. So you've had, you know, these visits, Superior, Rhinelander, Green Bay, Milwaukee. What are you hearing and learning as you go to these schools?
Well, first off, good morning. And it was certainly one of those visits. I mean, the first days of school are always very exciting. So when we go out and we see the kids and we visit, I'm hearing from the teachers that they're grateful for our support and advocacy from the Department of Public Instruction around issues such as mental health aid, you know, helping with teacher shortages, certainly looking at programming for the kids, you know, after school programming, especially as they come out of the pandemic. There's just a lot of needs.
There's a lot of needs. And we're going to get to the teacher shortages and mental health in a moment. But I'm wondering, is there a difference between visiting a school in a rural area versus an urban area? Is it a different feel of challenges?
You know, I don't think so, honestly. I think on the surface, I would say maybe before I had been in this job that possibly, but the needs that we have in our public schools in Wisconsin seem to transcend urban, rural, suburban. The excitement is there. I mean, the kids are excited to be back. Teachers and administrators and staff are hoping for a normal year. So I think that's one of the things that's really pleasant about it is that kids are kids and staff are staff. Throughout Wisconsin, we all have the same outlook and attitude.
How do these visits inform what you do in coming months and what you ask of Republican lawmakers?
So we've been putting together a budget for pretty much the past year. We will, provide our full budget to the governor on September 15th.
Mm-hmm,
and
Thursday.
This Thursday. So certainly what we are, when we go out to the schools and we talk to people, we talk to school boards, we talk with administrators, teachers, custodians, parents. And what they're all saying is the same, is that we need to make sure that we are shoring up our foundation, public schools, to ensure that our kids in this generation are prepared. Because they're the next leaders, they're the next, the citizens of Wisconsin in our future. So certainly, spendable revenue, that's important, especially when you look at the prices of everything having gone up, making sure that we have qualified adults in front of our kids and, staff running the building. There's just a lot. And coming out of the pandemic, we've noticed that not everybody was impacted the same. You know, some people did better than others, especially among our kids. And so we really need to address some mental health, especially anxiety among our youth. Like I said, there's just a lot of needs, and we're hearing that when we go out.
Governor Evers had told agency heads and secretaries in June to exercise caution going forward in our current economic environment. As these budget requests are due Thursday, is this in this, political and economic environment, what are specifically your budget priorities?
So, yes, we are being very cautious about what we're proposing. And so we're ensuring that what we're doing is really addressing the needs that we see. We need to increase special education reimbursement. And I guess I need to put this out there. K-12 public education, it's for everybody. We need a strong, well-funded, high-quality public education in the state. It benefits our children, our families with kids in schools, our community members. It's literally everybody. And DPI being independent and nonpartisan, we need to make sure that that's our focus. And so special education reimbursement right now, for the services like speech and language, among other things, with students with additional learning needs, the reimbursement rate is only 29%. And so we need to make sure that we're reimbursing that higher because our school districts need that funding. We have to require these services, and so they need to get reimbursed. We would love to put more money into mental health, making sure that every school has a full-time counselor, that can help with addressing the needs, especially as we come out of this pandemic. We need to address the staff shortages. And it's not just teachers, it's also administrators, but it's also custodians and food service workers and bus drivers. We have a priority in there for literacy and making sure that all students are reading at the grade level, before they leave elementary school and head on to secondary. We are looking at improving nutrition access. So during the pandemic, the U.S. Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Agriculture worked together to provide meals, free meals for breakfast and lunch for all students. And we noticed that it was widely popular. And we need to look at that because we need to make sure that every child is ready to learn and has a full stomach to do so.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment, talking about public education in our state with State Superintendent Jill Underle. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Your district needs, your school needs at the start of a school year. Before we move on, Superintendent, just one of the things that you mentioned there on the list, a full-time counselor at every school. Give us some context here. How close are we now to having a full-time counselor at every school?
It's really difficult to just let you know over the air because based on school size, I mean, some school districts may have a part-time counselor in an elementary and then a part-time in another elementary to make a full-time counselor. But what we've noticed is that we have reached a crisis level with our youth mental health. I mean, we have issues with access to mental health, sometimes in the rural areas, but as well as in the urban areas as well. Waiting lists are very long for outside services. And so schools are ideally situated to help bridge this gap. So what this would look like is that it would be an additional investment of roughly $250 million over the biennium that would support school-related mental health costs. And schools need access to that consistent funding in order to support their communities because it would fund at least one staff member in the district that, we could certainly focus on this with, it's certainly predictable then and sustainable, and it's exactly what our schools need.
Let's look at local property taxes for a moment, as state law limits how much a school district can raise property taxes in a given year. And your budget plan includes $800 million investment in state funds that you and Governor Evers say is meant to, quote, hold the line on local property taxes. Why attempt to keep property taxes where they are?
Well, and Governor Evers is correct in this. What it would do is if we put this $800 million from the state into our local school districts, it prevents our school districts then from having to raise their local property taxes. Just very generally speaking, the way that we fund our schools in Wisconsin is through an equalized aid formula. And so a portion of the property tax that we pay from our own homes goes to fund our local school, and then the state equalizes that with their aid. So if we are to put more money into the state formula, that'll actually hold property taxes stable on the local end. But I have to just, your listeners probably know this. I mean, it seems as though every few years, school districts in your area are going to a referendum. Because those property limits, those tax limits were put in 1993, and it's going to be 30 years since the state has done anything to really address the fact that school districts are really limited on how much money they can raise because of those revenue limits. And 30 years later, we have so many different needs, things that exist now that didn't exist back then. And our school districts are strapped, and so they really rely on the state aid. But if the state aid doesn't come through, then they have to go to referendum.
Jill Underley with us, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, as we dig into critical issues at the start of the school year. Join in on what they look like where you are. Teacher staffing, class size, parent communication, COVID policies, busing, referendums, school budgets, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We focus on critical education needs in our state with the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley, here. Just wrapped up a back-to-school tour of different K-12 schools alongside the governor. Join in on needs in your district, what you want the state education chief to know about your school in a real critical budget planning phase, 800-642-1234. Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley stays with us. Let's go to Jennifer in Eau Claire with a question. Jennifer, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. Dr. Underley briefly mentioned wanting children to leave elementary school being able to read. And for the past about 20 years, most Wisconsin schools have been using a balanced literacy approach. And during that time, we have not seen reading scores really take off. And so I am kind of curious, you know, about 30% of our children can read no matter what kind of instruction they get. But we know all children can learn with a very explicit instruction approach. So I want to know what Dr. Underley is doing to make sure it's equitable that all children learn to read and get that explicit instruction that is structured.
Jennifer, thank you for that. Superintendent.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jennifer, that's a great question. You know, certainly, as you mentioned, it's complex, right? Learning to read, we've been taking it with the balanced literacy approach. And to be honest, you know, included in that balanced literacy approach is phonics and explicit instruction, the science of reading, among other ways too. And so what we would like to do at the state is make sure that all elementary school teachers, and personally, I think all teachers should know how to teach reading, regardless of their grade level or subject area. But we want to make sure at the state that we are providing direct professional development to our teachers through like our regional, we have regional CESA networks, which are educational service agencies. We want to make sure that our teachers are getting that professional development so that they can provide this type of instruction to all students. And, you know, Wisconsin teachers are working hard to support students in becoming proficient readers. And so they need our support and to have those resources and the coaching and additional training to do that important work.
National data came out in recent days. I'm sure you saw that reading scores for elementary school dropped to their lowest levels since 1990 during the first 2 years of the pandemic. Math scores dropped for the first time in the history of a national test dating back to the 70s. When you look at these national test results, what's your strategy to get Wisconsin students back on track?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have no doubt that Wisconsin students will get back on track. I mean, we know that the COVID pandemic certainly, I mean, it's impacted academic learning, just as we know is it impacted mental health and emotional well-being of our children, and honestly, all of us too. And this national data that came out is national. It'll be really interesting for us in Wisconsin to see Wisconsin's results. And, you know, we're going to be releasing our local data on standardized testing results this fall. And certainly we'll add that data alongside other information regarding student performance as we, you know, we seek to gain an accurate picture of Wisconsin's situation. But I have no doubt, you know, there's always going to be, you know, the pandemic, I mean, this is a once in a century kind of situation, and kids learned, you know, I have no doubt that we will improve and we'll bounce back from that. We have to take the situation though as what it was. It was a once in a century kind of thing. And like I said, everybody was impacted differently. And so as we come out of that, like I said, with mental health, additional teacher training, getting more adults in our schools who are, you know, who can focus on these kinds of things is really important to us.
I want to turn to the teacher shortage for a moment. April from Prairie du Sac called, couldn't stay with us, and wants to know how Wisconsin is addressing the national shortage of speech pathologists. And last month, Susan Minter with the Wisconsin Association of School Personnel told us that there are staffing shortages in essentially every corner of the state school districts.
Pretty much all school districts are struggling with some type of staffing, whether it be teachers, whether it be support staff. It's pretty much widespread across the state.
What needs to be done to address these shortages?
Yeah, that's accurate. And the thing is, to go to your caller's question, I thank her for that, because the different areas like speech and language pathology, school psychologists, these are areas of special education. They're areas of pupil services. And they have a higher demand, right? There's certainly that shortage is much more acute. But as Ms. Minter also mentioned, I mean, that shortage is true no matter what area of the state you are and subject area. And so what we need to do is we need to implement both short and long-term solutions. Certainly, as you know, has been proposed in the past, changing the law to allow teachers who have retired to come back into the profession. You know, there's areas that we can look at that. I think that's a great short-term solution. It would provide some flexibility to districts to fill current open positions, for example, with some experienced staff. But we are also at the agency at the department looking at how we can help with this. And so partnering with different organizations, including our public colleges, the UW system, we're looking at an additional proposal that will relate to the teacher pipeline. And more details will come out on that on Thursday. But it's really a way to help school districts directly nurture the staff that they have who want to become teachers. I don't know about your listeners, but, you know, my kids, when they're in school, sometimes the adults that I would find who connected most with the kids weren't actually the teacher that they had as their homeroom teacher or whatever. They were support staff. And a lot of times, you know, those individuals want to become teachers. And so how can we help them, you know, and create, you know, these programs that'll help with the staffing shortage?
Talking with the superintendent of public instruction, Jill Underly, with us. Just a bit of a follow-up there. The $90 million in federal COVID aid meant to help retain staff. What will that do?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, where that came from is when we think about the fact that our schools did not get any increase in spendable revenue from this last biennium budget. So that's the 2021 to 2023. And so this aid can go directly to the districts. It's, you know, a per pupil amount that they can use, you know, to provide professional development, or maybe it's to provide, you know, assistance in salaries. You know, certainly the larger amounts could probably help hire somebody. You know, and so that's really where it's at, is that we need to make sure that our school districts have access to revenue so that they can pay staff what they're worth and pay them, you know, especially when you look at what the starting salary is for teachers in Wisconsin. We really need to focus on that. We need to focus on the respect for the profession as well, to get more people to, you know, want to become teachers, and so that we can ensure that Wisconsin public schools will stay strong for the next generation.
In our last moments left, I want to just ask you about Tim Michaels, who's challenging Governor Evers in November for the governorship, said in July that the problem is we're already throwing so much money at education. Money has been the fix for decades, just more and more money, and it's not working. Does he have a point?
I would argue that, you know, we haven't been throwing money at our public schools. What we do is it's the largest expense in the state, mm-hmm. you know, as it should be. Public education is for everybody. It's nonpartisan. It's the rural school in the, you know, the communities in our, throughout Wisconsin, as well as our urban schools. And we have an obligation in the state, to provide a K-12 education. It's in our state constitution. And yes, of course, as the years go on, it costs money. It costs money to run these things. It costs money to pay people to work in our schools, to run our buses, to run our food service programs. We can't expect that costs would go down and that inequality would somehow increase.
Superintendent Underly, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to talk anytime. There's always so much to talk about.
Indeed. Jill Underly is State Superintendent of Public Instruction. And ahead on the State Capitol Report, the state agency that oversees the issuing of professional licenses is facing tough questions about its turnaround time. Join in on the Department of Safety and Professional Services, 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican state lawmakers have raised questions about why the Department of Safety and Professional Services, or DSPS, is taking weeks to issue licenses and whether there is a backlog. State Senator Alberta Darling sent a letter last month to the agency's new head with a dozen questions. Some of those we will certainly probe. DSPS issues over 240 licenses, administers dozens of boards and councils that regulate professions, enforces state building codes, runs the state prescription drug monitoring program, and more. Join in 800-642-1234. Dan Harith is secretary designee of DSPS, formerly assistant deputy secretary of the agency, was appointed when Don Krim stepped down last month. Secretary designee Harith, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Welcome for having me on such a dreary Monday morning.
Well, I want to first look at these, quote, grave concerns that State Senator Alberta Darling brought up in her letter about a potential backlog in issuing licenses. What is happening there? What are you doing to speed up the licensing process?
Well, I appreciate you asking that question. Certainly, we hear from folks, both legislators and others, about this process and their concern for this process. This is something that we are very focused on. We're certainly in unprecedented times here in the state of Wisconsin and across the country. I know we're coming out of a pandemic, and while we are experiencing record low unemployment, record high labor force participation, at the same time that we're seeing a lot of turnover in the healthcare industry. My wife worked in a hospital setting throughout the pandemic. Certainly saw the stress that created on that environment, and I think. Part of the story is that we're all just very keenly aware of the workforce shortages that are happening, not just in Wisconsin, but throughout the nation. I'm extremely proud of the work that we're doing. We are currently issuing licenses in an average of 45 days. That's 40% faster than the agency has historically issued licenses, and we are actually issuing more higher volume of licenses than ever before. We've done that through a series of efforts, starting last year after the last budget. We weren't as successful in some of the resources that we requested as we would have hoped, and as a result, we immediately turned to planning for alternatives. We didn't see the trend of what the volume of applications decreasing, and in fact, it's increased over 100% in the last 6 years. And so we knew that we needed to start planning for other alternatives. I think one of the things that we didn't anticipate at that time, because if you'll recall, the workforce shortage wasn't necessarily as severe as it is now. was the difficulty that the agency would have hiring temporary workforce, both contracted temporary and limited term staff. I think historically, we're a very thinly staffed agency. We've been asked to rely heavily on temporary workforce in order to fill that gap. And so, you know, what was the next option at the table? Well, the next option at the table was technology. And so we dove headfirst in developing a new technology program, which is already yielding fabulous benefits, not just for us internally at the agency, but also for the citizens of Wisconsin.
I want to just pause before we get further into technology and what that impact that has made, because, I mean, from my understanding, you're a fee-based agency, so you have the operating budget sustained through the fees from your various licenses and so forth. What impact does that model have? I mean, when you say that you weren't successful in getting what you needed from the state.
Sure. The interesting part about government is that there's multiple authorities needed in any time you want to spend money or hire people, and you need both. So in the state of Wisconsin, specifically, you need spending authority and you need position authority. And so if you can have one, you can have the other, but you need both in order to when you're talking about hiring staff, to hire the staff necessary to do the work. We are a fee-based agency. We do not take a dime of general tax revenue, and we do have the resources internal to the agency in order to pursue the things necessary. However, in order to spend those resources, we need both those pieces of authority.
We heard from Kathy in Southern Wisconsin email to say that when Kathy's husband renews their Wisconsin CPA license, the whole process is seamless and takes minutes. And Kathy says that they do understand that others may have experienced delays and said, we would be willing to pay extra to raise the nominal fee to hire more staff at the agency. Would that be a possibility so more complicated cases could be resolved?
Yeah, I think as Kathy correctly points out, depending on whether you're talking about renewals or new licenses, and even license to license, the requirements vary dramatically. And as you can imagine, for every requirement that's added to the process, it certainly creates more iterations and more complexities. Raising fees certainly might be an option that's on the table. But that being said, even if the department were to raise the fees, the department would still need the spending authority and position authority in order to obtain the resources necessary. Our budget operationally has only increased about 0.5% for over about the last decade, each of the last 10 years. And as you can imagine, once you couple that with inflation, it doesn't go very far. But again, we're not talking about raising fees right now. What we have the resources necessary. What we're focused on is, trying to come up with creative ways in the interim while we're looking ahead to the next budget, in order to deal with the volume of work that's in front of us.
We're talking with the Department of Safety and Professional Services, Dan Harith, newly appointed agency head. You can join in at 800-642-1234. With budgets due Thursday, what is the priority for your agency?
The priority, as you can imagine, is staffing. I'll give you a real great example of the impacts of staffing. We have a call center that takes an average of 5,000 calls a week, sometimes up to 10,000 calls in a single week. And we have 6 full-time staff for that call center. That, quite frankly, that math simply doesn't work. And we've shared that in the past. And with 6 FTE across that number of calls, our answer rate is about 34%. and it creates an average hold time of between 35 and 40 minutes. In fact, when I first came to the agency, I was surprised to learn of those times and spoke with my own sister who waited on the phone for quite some time when she was working to get her license. And the reason why I give this as an example is because with the federal emergency dollars that the governor has been provided to the agency, we've been able to contract for additional call center staff and drop that or raise that rate to 90% answer rate and drop that wait time to about 4 minutes. But we had to quadruple our staff in order to get there. That just gives you a sense of the dire staffing needs at the agency.
But there are only 4 job openings posted now on the WISC jobs board for your agency. I just checked this morning. Is that an accurate representation of the openings in your agency?
Yes, that is an accurate representation of the openings at the agency. As with all government agencies and organizations, we're limited to the number of positions we can hire by the position authority that's granted to us.
Let's take another call now. Kate is with us in Sun Prairie. Kate, what would you like to bring up?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I've been listening for the past almost, I don't know how many months it's been since February. My best friend called me every day trying to figure out how to get answers. She has her master's in counseling, but is coming out of being a stay-at-home mom and wanted to go back and into the field. So she got a job, and they said, okay, now you can get your training license. Well, it's been since February, and she has no answers. She doesn't know where her application status is. She's driven to Madison, and they said that, like, because they had changed from the credit numbers, that she needs to obtain additional credits. But she doesn't know what classes she needs to obtain in order to get up to that credit level. And because of the mental health crisis, the person who hired her said she'll wait until she gets that training license. But it's, we're coming into September, and now she's just taking classes, not even knowing what classes she should be taking, and paying thousands of dollars for graduate classes, hoping that they will count towards that 60. So she's just looking for an answer as to what classes to take, because she knows that she needs to take them, and what she needs to do to get that training license.
Kate, thank you. Secretary Harris.
Absolutely. Kate, thank you for calling in. And I think first and foremost, that if Kate would be willing to provide her friend's information to your producers,
sure,
we would certainly be happy to give her friend a call and engage further on that. Our mental health licenses are some of our most complex, even quite frankly more complex than our physician licenses, and they can often be difficult to navigate. I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why the staffing shortage is such a concern for us, because there are instances like this where individuals need a higher level of service than we can provide. And I think getting down into that nuance and spending the time it takes with each applicant to figure out what the next steps for them are is important. And that's the only way that we help the folks and the citizens of Wisconsin move forward. You know, relative to the recommendations for classes, I know we certainly that's a common concern in the mental health professions, particularly when there's additional coursework that's necessary. We aren't allowed to recommend specific classes, as that would be akin to recommending specific colleges or specific or recommending private organizations. But that being said, I think we still would like to be able to do a better job working through the particulars of that with each individual applicant and understanding that helping them understand what information we can provide.
Dan Harris with us, Secretary Designee of DSPS, the Department of Safety and Professional Services, leads the agency that issues professional licenses, as we've been talking about, regulates building codes and trade industries, where we go next, oversees the Controlled Substances Board and Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. Join in with your questions, your experiences, 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Wisconsin Public Radio is personally important to you. Your gift today ensures that you and everyone in the state has access to this high-quality information and entertainment. WPR is listener-supported, and that's why your gift is so important. Become a member, and you're not only doing something good for yourself, you're doing something good for the whole community. Give now at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
On the Ideas Network, zoos and aquariums across the nation face the sustainability crisis. With limited space and resources, growing climate challenges, we talk with zoo leaders in Wisconsin and beyond. Next on The Morning Show.
New polling suggests inflation is the number one issue for most Americans. That's put some wind in the sails of Republicans. But abortion is a major concern, too, and that's buoying hopes for Democrats who fear another midterm shellacking. With the sprint to the elections underway on shifting political terrain, we'll find out if the candidates are addressing your concerns next time on 1A.
This morning at 9 on the Ideas Network.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your daily companion, with familiar voices, important conversations, and music and entertainment that make your day better. Thank you to the more than 50,000 contributing members who make quality WPR programming available to all.
Whether you laugh along with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or feed your mind with To the Best of Our Knowledge, you'll always find something to enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. Find our program schedule and listen online at WPR.org.
You're listening to The Ideas Network from Wisconsin Public Radio.
It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the new head of DSPS, Department of Safety and Professional Services. Some things on their watch: inspecting commercial buildings, amusement park rides, boilers, elevators, wastewater treatment systems. They administer dozens of professional boards and issue hundreds of unique licenses, coming under criticism from Republican lawmakers that the agency isn't moving fast enough to process these license applications. Join in, 800-642-1234. Secretary Designee of DSPS Dan Harith stays with us. So I want to turn now to building codes. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development says housing demand in our country is nearly the highest it's been in more than a decade. As your agency oversees the state's building and plumbing codes, are codes keeping up with developments in construction technology?
Well, we certainly are working hard to keep our codes up to speed with developments in technology. And I would highlight one thing that we've been working on over the past several months is mass timber. So mass timber is a newer technology using wood-based products for structural members of buildings. And it's really coming into its own right now. We just saw in the city of Milwaukee that the Ascent, the tallest mass timber building in the world, was built and developed. And we're incredibly proud of that work happening right here in Wisconsin. We also know Wisconsin has a robust forest products industry, and building a mass timber industry in Wisconsin can serve to help that industry as well. How does that relate to our agency? Well, we convened at the beginning of the year Mass Timber Task Force. We have folks from the USDA Forest Products Lab. We have folks from the architecture firm that developed the Ascent. We have folks from City of Milwaukee Fire Department and others who care about the safety of these products and the safety of these buildings, which of course is the department's number one concern. And that task force is currently working to develop mass timber guidelines.
I just want to pause right there because this summer, UW-Milwaukee Associate Professor of Architecture Alex Timmer was on our show talking about mass timber, and the International Building Code last year issued new outlines for building with wood.
I think the height limitations have more to do with managing life safety mm-hmm. and egress from the building than it does necessarily about the structure or the structural strength of the particular material, because they're engineered, so we can continue to make them larger and larger.
Okay, engineered to make them larger and larger. What needs to change in building codes with mass timber?
I think he hit the nail on the head in terms of life safety. In the conversations that I've had with our fire departments, one of the critical things is in any building safety issue is how quickly can you evacuate the upper floors of the building, and so really it's sort of a multi pronged system when you're talking about is a building safe. Mm-hmm. It's the structure of the building, number one. Number two, in your local community, is your community prepared to evacuate the upper floors of that building in the event of an emergency? And that's why we're working so closely with the City of Milwaukee Fire Department and others. Forgive my omission. Professor Timmer is also on our mass timber task force. So we are adopting the latest building code. That is in the final stages of approval. And that will include
There's tension here, right? Because do you feel pressure not to make codes, mass timber aside, but not to make codes more stringent, because that will increase building costs at a time when we desperately need new housing and new workforce housing?
Yeah, I don't think it's a zero-sum game. I mean, I think new technology all the time certainly has the opportunity to increase building costs, but it actually also has the opportunity to decrease building costs. So when we talk about updating the codes, the work is critically important on a number of fronts, to ensure that we have access to the latest technology. Really, it's about offering opportunities and choices to our builders and the consumers out there. And then from a safety standpoint, when we make these adjustments that increase the safety of our building code, it has downstream effects that improve insurance rates and save consumers money in other ways.
Talking about the Department of Safety and Professional Services with Dan Harith, newly appointed agency head, you can join in 800-642-1234. I want to circle back where we started our conversation with technology changes at your agency and what technology is allowing you to process these licenses more efficiently. What are you doing there?
Yeah, absolutely. Inside of about 6 months, we developed a whole new system for licensing healthcare workers in the state of Wisconsin. It's called Licensee. It's based on a Salesforce platform. Incredibly proud of our partnership, not just with Salesforce, but also with our implementer, MTX. They've done a fantastic job working with us and working with our licensed professions to develop this system. I think I'll give you an example of one person's experience and how this system is so important to moving the state forward. So I worked with a physician who was having some difficulties of obtaining a license, and she had applied several months ago in the old system, and she was licensed, I believe, as of a few months ago. But what happened in her particular circumstance was she had a multitude of documents. Some physicians have hundreds of documents that the department's required to review. And in those documents, she had different names. She had been married. And in addition to having been married, she submitted documentation, and some of her partners who are required to submit documentation on her behalf submitted from multiple email addresses. Hmm. And so that's a really great example of how disparate information coming from disparate places, seemingly about potentially different people, could slow the process down. In this new system, we've designed it to be applicant-driven. What that means for us is that we want to make sure that we put as much power in the hands of our applicants to move the process forward as is possible. And so they are able to directly upload documents, they're able to submit name change information, and they're able to update their personal information right on our website.
Secretary Harris, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, and I appreciate the time to talk with you today. Hope you enjoy the rest of the day and it gets a little sunnier out.
Thank you. Dan Harris, Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Earlier, we talked with the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley. This is a State Capitol Report. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.